Well, baby, you've been on my mind. I think about you all the time. Oh, I wanna see your face. I don't make me wait.
Welcome back, Sleeping Around the Podcast. We are here at the Transform Dental Sleep, sunny Scottsdale, Arizona, having a great time, meeting a lot of good people. But we have a very special guest today, just on stage with you, Ann.
Yeah, no,
Dr.
this has
Stacey
been awesome.
Ochoa.
Yep.
Where do you practice, Stacey?
I'm right outside of St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay.
So it's Imperial, perfect, technically. But yeah, right outside of St. Louis.
And you've been doing sleep treatment, sleep dentistry for a while now.
About 20 years.
20 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm dating myself. I can't believe I just said that out loud. 20 years I've been doing.
That just means you started when you were 15.
That's right.
That was.
That's exactly. Right. She's like the Doogie Howser of
dentistry.
That's what exactly. So I was actually on Stacy's podcast because Stacy also has ASAP. And can you describe what ASAP pathway is real fast?
I'd love to. It's Airway Sleep and Pediatric Pathway. So we're an online and we do live courses, in-person courses as well for dentist training dentists on comprehensive screening, orthodontic interception, how to collaborate with our medical colleagues for pediatric airway and sleep issues.
I'm so excited to have you and to talk to you more about this because I've got so many questions in my head.
Oh, I hope I can answer them.
Well, I hope so too. But to have you two together on stage talking today about pediatrics and about pediatric airway and what we can do.
Even though you weren't at it.
It's pretty cool. Well, I was there in spirit.
You were there in spirit.
Yes, I was there in spirit.
I
but
thought
I knew
so.
That I'd get all the information here.
So exactly. So you just wanted to clip notes.
I didn't know twice.
Yeah.
But
you didn't want to ruin the punchline.
Yeah,
you were like, this way I know what questions to ask. I know what you got.
I
if I
totally
do, yeah, exactly.
It, right?
No, totally get it. Totally get it.
But what drove you to pediatric sleep?
I was going to say she flew here. She didn't drive.
Yeah, exactly. So, I was treating adults for decades, which started with my dad, which here we are at this conference, right? And I'm seeing my mentors that taught me, you know, adult dental sleep management. So it's just always awesome to see them. But I got into adult because of my father, my dad. My dad was CPAP intolerant. And then what drove me into pediatrics was my children. Because there weren't any solutions for what I was witnessing in my home every single night. And the medical community wasn't giving me, they gave me some answers, but not the full spectrum. So that's when I started the whole rabbit hole journey of just traveling and studying and learning from all of these orthodontists and general dentists doing orthodontics that for decades had seen all these wellness and health changes after orthodontics in the area of sleep and breathing. And I'm like, okay, this could be the missing piece for my kids. So it was my own children. And I find that that's usually the case, that what brings someone into the pediatric sleep and airway realm with dentistry is they have a niece, they have a nephew, they have a kid. That something's not right and they're not getting answers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're trying to help their own family members and in their own community, kids in their own practices. So it almost takes a personal.
Yeah.
You know,
I was actually just going to ask a question because one of the things, obviously, I'm not a sleep dentist, right? I'm not even a dentist. I'm just a lowly physician who's attending a sleep dentistry conference. However, one of the things that I think we currently talk about is the gap between sleep physicians and sleep dentistry. But one of the things I'm learning statistically is that it's a very small minority of dentists who do full-time sleep dentistry, and that the majority or that even if you were to broaden and say, like, who does a few sleep dentistry things a month, please correct me if I'm wrong, it's like 10% are doing like the few a month, but it's only like 1% where there is a dedicated practice for sleep.
You're very correct. And I would say
one percent
of the 1% are doing pediatrics is probably where it's at too.
Oh, wow.
So we have 200,000 dentists in North America, and what is the, I mean, if you look at like who's a member of the AADSM or anything like that, it's like 7,000 members.
Yeah.
So 7,000 out of 200,000. And that's people that just dabble.
Sure.
A few here, a few there.
Sure.
Out of all the ones that dabble and do a few here, it's like you said, 10% do consistently. And yeah, 1% are doing significant.
So here's what demographic we found interesting, because what I thought was going to happen when we launched ASAP Pathway, like, all right, we're going to see the adult dental sleep medicine flood doors open and all the adult treating dentists are going to want to help the kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what happened.
Yeah.
What we find is it's general dentist, pediatric dentist, and orthodontist are coming to us that know nothing about adult sleep. So it
might be better. They're not tainted yet.
They are tainted. They know nothing. So they're coming in a clean slate. They know these kids are sick. And we were shocked. We really, really thought like the dental sleep medicine, the adult population would, or the adult treating population would be the majority of our members. And that's not the case at all. So there is a growing group of dentists, pediatric dentists, orthodontists that are airway aware, and we're trying to educate them on sleep within ASAP because they know nothing about sleep. They're coming in just like, we're seeing train wreck mouths, sick kids.
Sure.
How do we help?
Sure.
The adult dental sleep medicine side, demographically, the majority of them right now are like, glad you're seeing the kids. We don't want to see the kids. And we're trying to get them to change.
Sure.
Well, it's interesting. And this is part of the transformed dental sleep, right?
Yes. Like,
so it's interesting because a lot of dentists don't really jump into sleep in general because they're comfortable doing their general dentistry.
Yes.
And to do sleep, it's a change.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And as humans, we're just resistant to change.
Right.
And I feel like, and I've witnessed this even in my own practice, that jumping from doing adult sleep medicine into pediatric is another change that maybe we're not comfortable with.
Right.
And so that's where we need to be, is how do we get more people comfortable? We mentioned going back to like babies and kids, you talk about nasal breathing all the time.
Yes.
How important nasal breathing is for the development of the baby's arches, palates,
facial development.
Everything.
Yes.
Everything. You come at it from a neurologic perspective. What are the other things in addition to nasal breathing that you think are so important for just pediatric sleep in general?
Sure. So I think one of the questions that I think we've even had this conversation before of from birth, what are all the factors that may drive the development of nasal breathing versus mouth breathing? And so clearly, infections, not actually keeping the nose as clean as possible, et cetera. However, for years, we've seen this debate also around breastfeeding versus bottle feeding, thumb sucking, pacifiers. So all the things that are popularized in order to soothe the child, because that's critically important, because we want to soothe them so they can sleep. Those are going to also change craniofacial dynamics, right? So we know the thumb sucker, you're constantly reinforcing a high arch palate when you're doing that. Same thing with a pacifier. Mm-hmm. When you look at the nipples of a lot of the bottles that are utilized, you are now actually seeing a trend of changing the nipples to actually mirroring what a maternal breast would look like.
Yeah.
And that is a favorable thing. Now, in addition to that, one of the—
I'm so glad the nipples on the bottles are changing and that women aren't actually changing their
nipples. That might be the next thing. I mean, that's possible. Who knows? But the reality is that one of the things that I think we're still neglecting is that there's been lots of debate about what is breast milk versus formula contributing. Mm-hmm. But even before talking about the milk itself, it also is the exposure of the maternal flora on the breast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I reflect on some of the literature that has been developed to be able to study the microbiome. And the one that like struck me, and I was just like, oh my goodness, I never thought about this, is the germ-free model that has really demonstrated the significance of the microbiome in neurodevelopment. So what this is that this was animal models that are born in a sterile environment via C-section to ensure that they do not get any exposure to things that would actually feed to the microbiome. What did they find? They found highly, highly divergent brain development, changes in synaptogenesis as well as myelin development. Mm-hmm. And these were animal models that then ended up with significant neurologic consequence.
Yeah. Negative now, changes.
Negative
yeah.
changes, 100%. And so your synaptogenesis, that means that's how my nerves connect. Your myelin is the basically the conduction insulation around those nerves. So if you imagine this wire and I were to just take all this outside and just leave exposed wire, this isn't going to work so well. Right? Mm-hmm. Neither with me hitting it with my face, it's not going to work so well. Now, with that stated, why is that relevant? Because again, when I'm putting the baby on the breast, when I'm having a vaginal delivery, those are exposing the baby to all the things that are really important. How is this relevant to sleep disorder breathing, you ask? Is that when you're looking at, and I presented on this at the American Academy of Sleep Medicine last year, when you're looking at changes in the microbiome, there actually are changes that can lead to more chronic intermittent hypoxia, more severe, meaning that I have lower oxygen episodes and they are more severe. So instead of being at that 100%,
strictly
I'm dropping
from
lower.
From the microbiome standpoint.
Strictly from the microbiome. Okay. And more sleep fragmentation. So what ends up happening is I have a microbiome that's going, you're going to desat and you're going to fragment your sleep. And you know what that does? It makes me desat, fragment my sleep, have sleep disorder breathing. You know what that does? It changes. Totally screws up my microbiome.
Wow.
It makes me, so it's this vicious cycle. And so one of the questions that I ask is going, should we be addressing this from the beginning? And there currently is research. Like my institute, we're doing research on the microbiome, like giving probiotics as a supplement, not for sleep disorder breathing. It actually is for children who'd be high risk for something called NEC. It's necrotizing enterocolitis. Essentially, it's infection of the intestine. It destroys the intestine. And what we're seeing in that particular population is that the probiotic is making a huge difference, which makes sense. We're balancing the germs that should be there.
Wow.
And so the same thing is occurring now when you're thinking about the sleep disorder breathing. And it doesn't stop at the sleep disorder breathing. We also see it's driving asthma. It's driving cognitive outcomes. It's driving behavior. It's driving obesity. And so there is a bigger problem that we're contributing from the time of birth.
That is fascinating.
I mean, so, it really, the gut health component is huge. Mm-hmm. It is huge. I mean, it's our second brain.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I wonder just from a sleep dentistry perspective, right, is that that's not our only microbiome, right? We have an oral microbiome.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that is a major limitation in human study of the microbiome, so most of our microbiome data comes from rodents. Why? Because they're pooping nonstop, right? Humans are not pooping nonstop. In fact, if you're a woman, you probably are pooping like once every 5 days. But the reality is that...
It shouldn't be normal.
It shouldn't be normal.
You need to take probiotics.
I do take probiotics now, and I'll let everyone know that I poop more than once in every 5 days.
Good.
Now, with that stated, however, there is a microbiome of the mouth. And so if we're able to start studying that, that may also be something that will help us.
Yeah, so it's interesting because there's lots of dental studies.
Yes.
And so there's these studies on periodontal bacteria. Mm-hmm. There's studies on caries and the bacteria that cause caries. There's studies that link birth weight to the disease that parents have in their mouth. So when we see pregnant women, you know, we used to say
not only birth weight, but premature births
premature
as well.
Births and birth weights.
Yep.
And so, you know, it used to be this idea of, oh, you're pregnant. Don't take any x-rays. Don't get your teeth cleaned. Don't go to the dentist and get any fillings or cavities done. And I think that's shifting because now we're seeing, no, actually healthy mouth and mom is going to equate to a healthier baby some way or another. Now, I don't know that they figured out how that's all linked together.
Well, there's also in that same data, that's also the reasons why many times a pediatric dentist will say, don't, like if the binky falls on the floor, like don't pick it up and put it in your mouth and put it in the baby's mouth.
Absolutely.
Don't eat from the same spoon because you're now transferring.
That's where the caries risk will start.
Yes. Yep.
So I heard.
And just so people know, caries mean cavities.
Caries means cavities.
Yeah, it's not some woman living in your mouth.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Cavities.
Caries. High cavities, caries risk. So
isn't that like that scary movie that Carrie is like that scary? What
Carrie? Isn't that the Stephen King or
no? Carrie was the one.
Is that The Ring?
The Prom. Wait. I think we're all over the place.
Yeah.
I think Carrie,
Carrie is scary.
Carries are scary. Carries are scary.
Carries are scary. We can just all agree on that.
I'm hearing, so if we talked about nasal breathing.
And if you know what movie it is, please put it in the comments. Let us know because we're going to try and Google it later.
Scary carries.
Yeah. Scary carries.
Nasal breathing is so important. We talked about microbiome and breastfeeding and breast milk, not just from the fact that that's helping with development, but also with that. But what about diet when kids start eating? What do you think? Like, are you teaching parents or coaching parents or other dentists about the feeding? Because I'm concerned that we've gone to mush.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting is a lot of parents, if you look today, it's these little melts, it's like give them a little treat that melts in their mouth. I mean, they don't have to do anything. They just sit there and the little treat melts in their mouth, little applesauce packages. Mm-hmm. They're so afraid their child's going to choke. But mm-hmm. what is interesting is when they look at, third world countries where they eat what the parents eat, mm-hmm. they're pulling meat off the bone without teeth.
At mm-hmm. 6 months old.
They're ripping.
That was meat. My kids at 9 months. We're eating lamb with no teeth.
Yeah.
They
chew meat mm-hmm. without teeth. People just can't believe it. The choke factor is actually greater in our type of civilization where we are pulverizing and blending everything because they have such low tone. They don't know how to chew. They mm-hmm. don't know how to swallow properly. So the choke rate is actually higher because we have these, hey, we don't want to make you have to chew anything. Mm-hmm. I had a friend, this is crazy. It was bananas. And she was just cutting up the bananas so tiny. And I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm afraid they're going to choke. I'm like, it's a freaking banana. I mean, it's just kind of gone so processed. So not only do we have an issue with the texture of the food and the lack of chewing that has existed for thousands and thousands of years, and we're seeing changes in the face because we're atrophying muscles mm-hmm. that are necessary mm-hmm. to grow a proper face, but also the ingredients of the food.
Yeah.
So processed, so much inflammation.
Sure.
I mean, we have kids with just junk guts. Allergies, since the 70s, the allergy rate is off the charts. Asthma is off the charts since the 70s. I mean, we're just going in the wrong direction with health with our kids. And it's just about more whole foods. But you and I had this conversation.
Sure.
There's also, how do we get change? I mean, because everything is processed.
Yeah. Well, but once you're, and once you're afraid, once the media makes it scary that your kid's going to choke on something, and I'm not saying we shouldn't be afraid that kids can choke.
100%.
But
there has to be a balance.
Is this overblown? Are we worried too much about choking
yes.
to the point where we're not developing? Like, because I think I'm more scared about my kids not developing than I am choking.
Yeah. And I think it's more comprehensive than even just thinking about the jaw and the teeth and all that. It's also developing a palate, right? So the child who's only getting very bland, restricted foods at 1-2 years of age, when you want them to start eating what you're eating, they're not going to eat it because it's exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think when we're looking at kind of where we're at currently, first and foremost thing that I want to say is that there is zero intention that we have to stigmatize anyone in regards to how you're feeding your children or what culturally you may be offering, because everyone is entitled to have their family approach. The second is saying that we currently are also in a situation where it is extraordinarily expensive to eat whole foods.
It is.
I go grocery shopping. I cannot leave a grocery, and we grocery shop every week. I cannot leave a grocery store and spend less than $400 to $500. And I try to stay on the perimeter of the store, not going mm-hmm. up and down the processed food. And it's just myself, my husband, and a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. I can't even imagine what that cost would be for other American families who may be larger or who may need a higher daily intake of calories, because it's extraordinarily expensive. And so we really need to look at how do we make food more accessible? How do we make these options? And it's not just in the home. Many of the children in the United States, especially school-age children, they are getting school lunches. School lunches are an embarrassment in the United States. You want to talk about processed foods. You want to talk about garbage. It is pizza. It is chicken nuggets. Mm-hmm. It is a deli meats that are like the most processed, terrible deli meats that have high sodium and high preservatives and everything else. And there's nothing that's balanced there. And in fact, it's interesting because in my own family, my child who's in second grade, she's like, well, I want to buy lunch because everyone else is buying lunch. And so we had given into it initially. Mm-hmm. And I said, baby girl, this isn't healthy for you. I was looking at the foods that she was getting and I'm like, we can send you to school with a more comprehensive, health conscious food option. And it's interesting because some of these kids, especially once they get to high school, that's not the cool thing to do. Yeah. No. So it is setting the tone of how do we actually make it the cool thing to do to eat a more balanced diet. And I do think it's going to take this marriage between medicine and dentistry to start stacking hands and going, the mouth matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's your entry point for everything.
Yes.
It's the portal.
Yes.
It really is.
Let's talk about that a little bit, if I can ask you, Stacey. Working with physicians when it comes to pediatrics, who's your number one go-to when you when you have a kid that's in your dental practice, new patient, hygiene, whatever it is, and you're looking at them, they're mouth breathing, you're looking at the development, they're 4 years old, and you're thinking there's an issue. What I think we run into, what I've seen a lot in the past that's kind of been discouraging for a lot of dentists is either they're not comfortable or the parents just aren't bought into it.
Right.
Or they're running into a situation where the parents say, well, the ENT says they're fine.
Right.
Or the pediatrician says they're fine. And so I don't believe what you're telling me. Or that's kind of what I see. So what have you seen there?
And I've seen all those things too. And you're right. That is the wall we're up against. I think it's empowering dentists to plant seeds, have conversations. You might give them a take-home questionnaire and just say, hey, you know, I'm seeing some flags with your child's growth and development. Do you have a few minutes for me to go over it? Because really, you have to ask permission if they even have time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
These parents come in the room sometimes and they're literally on their phone. They're just looking down and you're telling them, okay, everything, no cavities. Like, uh-huh, yeah. They're just not even engaged all the time. So just getting that undivided attention of the parent, maybe having the parent just give them some information, plant some seeds, because maybe they weren't prepared to hear something like this. They just want to know if their kid had cavities or not. Mm-hmm. Then you have that kind of conversation. You start planting seeds. The ones that are really interesting is, you know, they'll come back. Sometimes it's 2 or 3 recares.
Yeah.
And then they're like, you know, you mentioned before that how little Johnny, you know, how he's on Adderall and he has this and this and this. I've been watching and I looked at that sheet and you're right. There's a lot of things on that sheet that I'm checking off. I'm like, okay, great. We need to just go ahead and take it and let's take the next step, you know?
Okay.
Getting them to an ENT that is progressive. That is not always the easiest thing.
Yeah. And also exposed to sleep. And also has exposure to sleep because a lot of ENTs are not.
So,
and I ran into this with my son, just to explain. My son was 4, snoring, behavioral, wetting the bed, all the things that we talked about. And is TNA still the first line therapy?
Usually.
If they see they're significant. So some of them, they'll do a scope.
Yeah.
And they're like, their adenoids aren't very impressive.
Yeah.
However, allergic rhinitis is a really big cause for mouth breathing and fragmented sleep as well. So not all ENTs deal with allergies.
Well, yeah. And so what we ran into with the 2 ENTs before I finally found the one that would was, well, he doesn't ever have strep throat. He doesn't have a history of strep. Mm-hmm. The tonsils are big, but he'll grow out of them. Yeah. Like this is kind of the stuff that I heard that was kind of frustrating for me. It took a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And most, unfortunately, most parents maybe just once they hear that once or twice from their doctor, they're not going to keep pushing or not going to keep working.
Sure.
So what have you done in your community to, or how have you managed that?
So I have, and this is where you have to get out in your community. And you have to have conversations with your colleagues. You have to call them up. You have to have a conversation. You know, I have a demographic of patients that meet these symptoms. Are you open to seeing my patients? I mean, they'll tell you, don't bother sending them to me.
Yeah.
I actually had an ENT call me and said, please quit sending me patients. And I said, done.
Done, yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
Done. So, I mean, I probably talked to 5 or 6 ENTs before I found the ENTs that were willing to see these kids and take it serious and also just kind of go outside the box and incorporate allergy testing. Here's what's impactful. I tell parents too, you have to go to that ENT visit with information. You can't just walk in and say, my dentist said I needed to see you.
Yeah.
Because that happens a lot. And the ENT's like, and, you know, I don't have a reason to do anything. I'm huge on writing down the symptoms that you see. If you see mouth breathing, my child's mouth breathing, their lips are always chapped. They're doing poorly in school. They're tossing and turning all night. They're wetting the bed. Record their sleep. A video of your child's poor sleep says everything to the ENT. A lot of times the ENTs don't do anything because there's poor communication between why the patient's even in their office in the first place. So it's going equipped, fully equipped, and making sure the dentist and the parent are on the same page of presenting the symptoms. I also say, please don't walk into that office to that ENT and say, my dentist said their tonsils and adenoids need to come out because that's just as offensive to the ENT.
Because you've diagnosed something that's
as an ENT sending me, you need a crown number two. I'm like, oh, really? I mean, really?
Yeah.
So it's present the symptoms, give them data, record.
Do you refer patients? Like when you refer, do you just say, here, go to the ENT? Or do you send like a workup to the ENT?
I have a sheet with all the symptoms. Okay. We circle everything we're seeing symptomatically. I tell them, please, please, please. Record your child's sleep if possible. There's something called Snore Lab. You could actually put it on your phone because some parents are like, I am not going to stay up all night. I mean, if a child's snoring, that's bad.
Yeah.
But it's just as simple as their mouth sometimes just hanging open and just failure to nose breathe.
Yeah.
And just fragmented sleep. So just going into that appointment, in fairness to the ENT, fully equipped, giving them all the information. Now, I also put if there's a malocclusion, a dental malocclusion, from mouth breathing. That is huge for an ENT because the criteria for removing tonsils and adenoids, dental malocclusion from obstructive noses and tonsils is higher on the list than strep and infection and three antibiotics in the year or whatever their criteria is. So dental malocclusion is higher in their criteria for surgery even than infection. So the dentist needs to mention what they're seeing. The ENT doesn't know what they're looking at in there. So it's our job as the dentist to say, hey, this is these are the things we're seeing, and then advise. I have a patient who has been, she went to four ENTs before that ENT finally got the tonsils and adenoids out. Totally different kid.
This is absolutely amazing. I mean, we've covered so many different great points. And so one of the things that I do think is really important is that there are some really, really great pearls here. And whether you are a sleep physician or a sleep dentist, one of the things that I want you to hear is we need to meet at the mouth. We need to stop this big gap because clearly one of the things that we're struggling with and we're putting it on our patients as an onus is by forcing them to have to navigate these very difficult situations to figure out how to have the optimal health. We're hearing that there's changes that can occur in the mouth that can be signs and predictors of other medical diseases as well as psychiatric disease, and the inverse being true as well as these medical issues that can be resulting in other dental things. Now, one of the other pieces is that you're not a medical professional. You're not a dental professional. You're a mom, just like I'm a mom. The things that I'm hearing today is that we want to be able to communicate to the people who are taking care of our children and facilitate the care that is needed for them to have their optimal outcomes. So please, if no one else has told you this, continue to be an advocate for your child. Continue to persevere. Continue to give the descriptions to every medical or dental professional that you're seeing of the concerns you have. The goal that I have is that from the medical side, we're going to break down those barriers for you. But if we haven't, this is your call to action. Continue being an advocate for yourself and for your child. Thank you so much for sleeping around with us here at Transform Dental Sleep.
Yes.
And we're just keeping it between sleep friends.